desire and interest in your prayers and your attention today. I'd like to talk about something that I'll call overcompensation. I'd like to begin by turning maybe to Ephesians, the 4th chapter, and reading the 14th verse, I believe. Familiar passage of Scripture, I believe, to every one of us. It says here in Ephesians 4 and 14, that we henceforth be no more children, tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine, by the sleight of men and the cunning craftiness whereby they lie in wait to deceive. We know that there are deceptive individuals in the world, and we rub shoulders with many people that if given the right opportunity in the right situation, that they'll take advantage of that situation and exploit it to their benefit and our detriment. There's a caution here. The Apostle Paul's writing to the church at Ephesus, and he says to be careful that we be no more children. Tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine. A wind is something that I believe he's referring to, something that's more than just a little breeze or a gentle cooling airflow. I believe he's talking about something that would make you reach for your hat, or maybe be careful about opening and closing a door, or something of that nature. And we have wind, but not like Oklahoma has wind. I don't miss the wind of Oklahoma. When we first moved out of the city limits, when Anita and I moved out there to the place we moved from to come here, one of the first things that we had to be prepared for is every time we went out the back door of our house, we had to hold on to the... You don't just open the door and walk through it and let the little thingy close the storm door. It won't do that. You better have a hold of it, and when you get out, you carefully take the door and latch it, because if you don't have a hold of it and you open the door, the wind's going to catch it and it goes crash, maybe against the side of the house and breaks the glass or something. Or maybe you try to open the door and it feels like somebody's on the outside pushing in on you, just because of the magnitude of the wind. We lived out there, and our house was on just a slight hill, and not much of a hill at all, really. But there was a row of pine trees along the driveway. The driveway was east and west, and you could tell that the predominant wind was from the south, because all of my pine trees, this is the south over here, so all of my pine trees were like this, even when the wind wasn't blowing, and all the limbs of the trees in the front yard was over like this. And if the wind was blowing, you know, you kind of understood, but when the wind wasn't blowing, the trees were still leaning like this. And in the wintertime, it seemed like the wind blew from the north, but not quite as strong. But in the summertime, it was a south wind, unless something dramatic was happening. It was a wind from the south constantly. You could just count on the wind blowing from the south all spring, summer, and fall, it seemed like, until the wintertime came. We know that young trees, like young children, are easily swayed by wind. literally, the wind can cause little children and maybe someone that's not as strong, if they're up in age and maybe not as strong as they used to be, they can actually cause people to lose their balance and to fall just because of the wind. People have taken trees. I've seen pictures of trees that were planted maybe close together as small saplings and wove those trees together to where when they grew up and matured years down the road, it looks like some kind of cage or something. I'm sure some of you have seen those things. So when things are younger and tender, it's easier for them to be impacted by the wind, by some forces that's not necessarily seen, not necessarily something that's easy to discern what's happening, but there's forces that shape their lives and shape the way they grow. And I'm curious and interested in us today in knowing what we do to compensate for the winds that come against us. I know that some people, when they plant trees and it's windy, you'll see some kind of guy wires, like for a tower or something, that's anchored in the yard, and they'll have something holding that tree, and they're trying to keep the tree straight and compensate for the wind that's blowing against it. But every little branch that grows up a little higher than that or off to the side is still impacted. And the tree may be straight for a little while, and then up at the top it's leaned over like this. So we do things in our lives to compensate for the forces that come against us. And it's very important for us to be alert. I remember one time driving a customer came in a number of years ago with an older motorhome, and I went to drive it, and the wind was blowing from the south. The road I was driving on was an east-west road, and I went out to try to recreate whatever concern they had. And I was apprehensive about driving this thing because when I would get up to speed, it was like I was constantly, if you know what I'm talking about, you got the steering wheel cranked around like you're going around the corner and you're going straight down the road. And about that time, you go past a big building or maybe a semi passes you or something like that. And all of a sudden, the forces that was against you change, and you've got to go the other way, or we're fixing to change lanes or be in the ditch or something like that. That's compensation. And when we're compensating for the forces that's against us, many times our reaction to the forces that change aren't fast enough. So I want us to think about that and about us overcompensating. I believe the reason that Paul says to be mindful of this, to be no more children or immature, and don't be tossed to and fro one direction and then another by different winds of doctrine, is he wants the ones there in the congregation to be mature and to be able to be stable and to be able to compensate for the things that come against them that would push them off the course and get them off in a way to where the enemy could take advantage of them and destroy their souls. And today, I believe the message is still the same. The Lord would like for us to be able to compensate and remain on the path of righteousness in the midst of the winds and the storms that we face in life. And we're going to face winds of doctrine from the world around us. We're going to face winds of all kinds of accusations and persecutions and disappointments. We spend our entire life endeavoring to compensate for the forces that come against us. It's not all on level ground. It's not all smooth sailing. It's not all in a vacuum where there's nothing that can deteriorate or cause us to have a failure or a disappointment in life. We're constantly adjusting. Some of us are old enough. I can't say that I'm old enough to remember a lot of cars having this, but I've driven farm machinery that had what some of us call a suicide knob. You know what that is? A spinner knob on the steering wheel. And my mother talks about riding in an old car down rough, rocky roads that she grew up on, and that her dad always had a spinner knob on the steering wheel, and it was important that you had that because the changes of the road and the looseness of the steering on the car was so great, you couldn't change the steering wheel fast enough by your hands. You needed that steering wheel, that knob, to spin it back and forth. Now, that's some pretty intent driving, folks. And you don't want to try to drive 70. They're probably doing good to go 20 miles an hour on roads like that. But sometimes we feel like life needs a spinner knob on it to turn and keep the slack up and keep us going down the straight path. I hope I've made that point clear. And I'd like to turn to James in the third chapter. James was he says in the first verse of the first chapter, James, a servant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ, to the 12 tribes which are scattered abroad, greeting. Now, James, some feel that this James was a brother of Jesus, not a full brother, but a brother being the son of Mary and Joseph, whereas Jesus was a son of Mary and the Holy Ghost, it says. But he was raised in the same household as Jesus, most likely, as a little boy. And James here says he's a servant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ to the 12 tribes which are scattered abroad. And I said earlier at prayer request time, I'm glad for the city of God and the New Jerusalem. So today I believe that I'm part of the 12 tribes. I'm part of spiritual Israel today, so I'm going to take this as advice to me, what James says. And I'd like for all of us to take that this morning. I'd like to go to the third chapter and begin reading in the first verse. He says, "My brethren, be not many masters, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation." I done a little research on this verse, and one of the things that several say is that masters here probably refers to many teachers. Many trains of thought, many ideas. He says here, "My brethren, be not many masters." He's given some instruction and some guidance. And it's so easy to begin to hear different points of views and different directions. The other verse we read was that we wouldn't be tossed to and fro by winds of doctrine. Very different perspectives of what God would expect out of us, or God, or this or that, or what's important in life and what's not important in life. But he says here, "Be not many masters, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation." I want to tell you that if you don't have your mind made up about something that you are trying to purchase, and you start going to one place and then another, trying to get all the information that you can, and you think you want a Whirlpool, and somebody else says you need to buy a Frigidaire, and then you go and you hear that Maytag is better, and you start shopping all your appliances around, and you get all of these different perspectives, it's going to be real hard for you to sort through it and decide which one that you really need, or which one's the best for you. We have so much available in our world today that it brings confusion. How many of us here have ever, those of us that are men, your wife calls you up and you says, "Honey, would you stop by the store and pick up something. A bag of some kind of pasta. That's a good aisle to go down. Go down there and pick me up some of these noodles or some of this, whatever it is. And you go down there and there's a whole, it looks like 20 feet of aisle, 5 foot high of different opportunities. And so do you want the ones that look like a little, an S, or do you want the ones that look like C's, or do you want the ones that look like snail shells, or the ones that look like a wrinkled up old piece of tin, or what are you looking for here? And then do you want the 4 ounce box or the 6 ounce box? Or there is so many things, and pretty soon it's just like, I'll take that. You see what I'm saying? There are so many things pushing it, so many choices, and the instruction here says, my brethren, be not many masters. You've been going and getting an opinion over here, an opinion over there, and hearing what the philosophers of the world says, and you begin to listen to what this person says, and you know they're not right on some points, and all of this, and pretty soon it says, shall receive the greater damnation. You're going to be so mixed up that you don't know what's right. It's going to be hard to compensate for all the stuff that you're hearing. You're going to feel like you need a spinner knob on life. Notice what he says in the next verse. For in many things we offend all. If any man offend not in word, the same is a perfect man and is able also to bridle the whole body. All of us here are prone to making mistakes. He says, for in many things we offend all. Every one of us here have multiple opportunities at making mistakes. And it says, if any man offend not in word, if we don't offend in word, the same as a perfect man, and is able also to bridle the whole body. It's important that we get a hold of the idea here that if we're able to compensate and with our words and think about what we're saying and consider the impact of it. And, you know, we compensate for things with our words so much. But he says here, if we're able to bridle this, if we're able to keep this in control, we're able to bridle the whole body. We're perfect men. The next verse says, I'm going to say that he's using the next two verses to try to paint us an illustration. He says, behold, we put bits in horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn about their whole body. Behold the ships, which though they be so great, they are driven by fierce winds, yet are they turned about with a very small helm, whithersoever the governor listeth. So we take a big ship and we have a little paddle sticking out the back of the ship somewheres down in the water, and this large vessel that's on the water, whether it's on a lake or in the ocean or whatever, is directed by this little thing at the back. And we think about a bit put in a horse's mouth, and a horse has to be trained as how to respond to that bit, but it's a small thing. You can carry a bit and the reins around all day and not be wore out. I don't know about a rudder on a ship, but you could carry a bit and some reins for horses, maybe slung over your shoulder and not be tired. But I'd hate to carry a horse around. You see, the little thing controls the whole body. So the point, the illustration he's making here is the impact that our words have and our tongue has on the whole demeanor of our character. All right? The next verse tells us, actually I'm going to read the 5th through the 10th verse. He says, even so the tongue is a little member and boasteth great things. Behold how great a matter a little fire kindleth. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members, that it defileth the whole body, and setteth on fire the course of nature, and is set on fire of hell. For every kind of beast and birds and of serpents and of things in the sea is tamed and hath been tamed of mankind, but the tongue can no man tame. It's an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. Therewith bless we God, even the Father, and therewith curse we men, which are made after the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. Now he paints a picture that almost sounds hopeless. And it sounds like it includes all of us, doesn't it? To this point. But listen to what he says. My brethren, those of you that is part of New Jerusalem, these things ought not so to be. So, there's hope. There's hope for me. There's hope for all of us. He says, this shouldn't be like this. Yes, we all have the propensity, the inclination to use our tongue to stir up a big fire. It's very easy for words to create a wildfire. And many times the words we use, we're compensating for something that has come our way. We think about... I want to relate something that's happened in my work area. You work around people that are in the repair industry, and by and large, you hear cursing. That's probably not a surprise to anybody here. Something happened that's a disappointment, something that happens that maybe they scratch theirself or pinch their finger or hit their thumb or whatever it is. Here comes some curse words. Well, I don't do that. But I've injured myself on the job. Thankfully, not terribly bad. But I bumped my head a lot. And I've pinched my fingers and lots of things like that. And I say, ow. That hurts. Or that's going to leave a mark or something like that. And you know what I find? There is something about the words that we say that begins to set a tone instead of sets an atmosphere. And I know the fellow that I've worked next to for 10 years, he still uses language that I'm certainly not comfortable with. But when I first started working there until now, there's a difference. And he used to use some terrible words that I don't hardly ever hear until some of his buddies come in. And they're over there. But now when he hits his head or does something, he don't always use some kind of curse word. See, our words and how we compensate for the things... I'm just using this as an illustration. Has he got the same convictions that I do? No, he don't. But there's a tone. I'm going to tell you, if the first time he seen me hit my head and I reeled off a big long list of curse words, you know what he'd do? He'd still be doing just what he did. But there, when we compensate for injuries by saying one, how we respond to things, and we're compensating to that, it sets a tone. It sets an atmosphere. Somebody else realizes you don't have to take the name of God in vain because you mashed your finger. Or something fell off of the bench and broke in two pieces. You don't have to use those kind of words. You set a tone, see? He says, my brethren, these things ought not to be. But the tongue is something can really start something going. Many times we use words in our tongue to express disappointment, and we're compensating for the feelings that we have when something doesn't turn out like we would like for it to. The things that impact our lives, good and bad. We say things to maybe spread it around and share it a little bit, and we want others to enjoy it or feel that we feel neglected or we feel left out. The writer's challenge to us is that the tongue should not be used to destroy other men's lives with the fires we set. You know, there are fires that are set for good reasons. Fires to set to burn away some rubbish so that when the big fires fight, that they're fighting comes to that, it runs out of fuel. You know, they do that. So, you know, we want to, when our family comes to us and they're unloading their troubles, from little on up, our children come to us and they maybe have tears in their eyes and they have something that has been a hurt to them. Maybe they fell, maybe someone pushed them, maybe they've been left out. And we immediately begin to try to compensate for that with the words that we say. Here, let Daddy pick you up. Well, show me where it hurts, son. Well, you know, you're not bleeding. That's too far from your heart to kill you. That's what I've told mine. It's going to be all right. Maybe you give them a little bit of kiss and listen to them and you compensate for the hurt that's come to their way and you set them back down. You want to go back and play now? Uh-huh. And they take off. And you compensated with words for something that impacted their life. There's another way to compensate. It's called overcompensation. Really? Are you hurt? Well, who done this to you? Well, I'll just go straighten them out. You see what I'm saying? Well, here, let Daddy take care of them for you. You see? And if we're not careful, we start building the wrong kind of fire. Well, I will go down there and I will tell their parents that they need to keep their little child in the house if he can't behave any better than this. You see? And now I've took the steering wheel of his little life and I've run it plumb off in the bushes somewhere and I'm making a new path for him. It's called overcompensation. And you know what? It's my tongue and I'm starting a fire that I don't want to burn. May the Lord help us. Verse 11 says, 11 and 12 says, doth a fountain send forth at the same time, same place, sweet water and bitter? Can the fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries? A fig tree having olive berries. It don't happen that way, does it? If you plant corn, you don't expect to pick tomatoes off of that. That's what he's saying. Can the fig tree, my brother, bear olive berries, either a vine, figs? No. So can no fountain yield salt water and fresh? He uses things that's found in nature to give us the illustration that there should be some wholesomeness and our compensation should be appropriate to the character we're trying to display. So, what do we do with our words? How do we compensate? How do we adjust for the things that impact us in life? Are we vengeful? Are we looking for injury on the other person? Are we trying to compensate and ask the Lord to display the Spirit of Christ in all that we do? We can overcompensate. Have you ever seen someone, or maybe you've been there, go down the road, gravel road, driving too fast, hit a bump, and you start, the back of the vehicle starts bouncing around, and you really crank that steering wheel, and then it goes the other way, and before you know it, it's back this way, and then you're spun plumb out. You may go in the wrong direction, and you're liable to be out in the field somewheres. And many times, it's because of overcompensation. Many times, it's because the way we react is, maybe we just say, that's not right. Maybe we say, I won't put up with that. I'm asking the Lord to talk to me too today. Because it's easy for us to cause things to go sliding out of control by overcompensating. Maybe it's too fast. Maybe it's taking it a direction that we shouldn't go. I'd like to look at verse 13, 17, and 18. It says, who is a wise man and a dude with knowledge among you? Let him shew out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. The meekness of wisdom. 17th verse says, but the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace. Many times we try to, the way we compensate, I wonder sometimes, are we really looking for peace? Or are we looking for resolution? Are we looking for, help some? I've been there, folks. I'm not talking about some hypothetical. I've been there where this urge to want somebody else to feel what I felt causes me to overcompensate with the words and my actions. And then I look back on my life and I think, you know, I wish I hadn't have done that. I wished I hadn't responded that way. I wished I hadn't have said that or did that. I wonder where those people would be today if I hadn't have responded the way that I did. I'm talking to you because I'm just as prone to making mistakes as anybody else. That's what the verse said that I read to you earlier. We're all prone to overcompensating. May the Lord help me to put a guard on my tongue. He says here, the wisdom that's from above is going to sow peace of them that make peace. I want peace in my own life. I want peace in the lives of those around me. If somebody comes and we've heard the expression, fight fire with fire. That's overcompensating. You hit me in the lip, I'm going to hit you in the nose. And both of you are injured. May the Lord help us. I'd like to go back and read 14 and 15. It says, but if you have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, and devilish. It's devilish to overcompensate and retaliate with the purpose of crushing and hurting and helping someone else to feel just what you feel. That's the wisdom of the world. The wisdom of the world says, do unto others before they do unto you. But the wisdom that's from above says, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. The tongue can give us many directions and situations, emergencies, confusions, eagerness. You know, if we, all the little children, y'all may not be paying too much attention to me right now, but if I said, look, there's an elephant outside, more than likely you would all say, really? And if you looked out there and really seen the elephant, what would you might what you do? You might run to the back door and all pile up at the door, and somebody's going to say, hold it. One at a time, we'll all go out and see the elephant. You see? But our words are used many times to give some order. If somebody is, if there's an emergency and somebody comes in and is able to give a sense of calmness and says, okay, I need somebody to turn the gas off and you go get the fire extinguishers and you see what I'm saying? But we want to be careful. The devil will come along. Well, it's already on fire. Just throw some more gas on it. That's what the devil wants us to do. Don't look like that's salvageable. Just pour some more gas on it. That's the wisdom that's from above, from below. I'm sorry. There's a point I want to bring out about guiding the horse and guiding the ship. When you got a bridle in the horse and a rudder on the ship, it's not very precise. Somebody that is riding a horse, horses, they're not going to turn like a farm tractor. You're not going to be able to regulate them like you can a piece of mechanical equipment. And when you're going in the water, you can't regulate a boat like you can an automobile, because there's the variable of the water. I remember one time I was sitting in a class in school. The teacher says, now if you was going upstream in a boat, and the boat could travel 10 miles an hour in still water, and you was going upstream and the river was flowing downstream at 2 miles an hour, how fast would you be going relative to the land? Well, the answer is 8 miles an hour, right? And then they went on to say, and if you was flying in an airplane and you was going 200 miles per hour and you had a 20 mile an hour tailwind, how fast would you be going in relation to the land? Well, that's 220 miles an hour. And then they said, if you was riding a bicycle going 12 miles an hour and you was in a 3 mile an hour headwind, how fast you would be going? And somebody said, well, 9 miles an hour. And the teacher said, that's right. And I said, no, it's not right. If the speedometer says you're going 12 miles an hour, you're going 12 miles an hour. Because it's hooked up with a little cable, goes down to the wheel that's turning. Really? I said, really. Trust me. Now, I don't care how big my vocabulary is or is not, and how capable I am of using my vocabulary, we have to be very careful in how we compensate. It is so easy for me to use words that's taken wrongly. It's easy for me to use words that maybe I don't fully understand the impact. And I realize that other people can say the same things to me. Somebody may not realize how hurtful or how this sounds when I say it. So it's kind of like riding a horse or driving a boat. You don't just go flying across the lake and then jam on the brakes and come up to the dock. It don't work that way. You got to carefully maneuver up there or you're going to wreck your boat. May the Lord help us to think about how we say what we do. Many times, extreme compensations are necessary. But we must be aware that when circumstances change, we must change as well. If you've never driven something like a motorhome that looks like a big billboard down the road, you probably don't quite understand what I'm saying, but I'm going to tell you, it can be frightening. It is to me. To drive this thing and to keep it going straight down the road because of the changes of the wind. And if you cannot snooze at the steering wheel at all, you're going to wreck. We can't snooze at the controls of life. It'll be a disaster if we do. Have you ever noticed sometimes when children are disciplined that one of the objectives of the parents is for the child to show some remorse? Ever noticed that? What you're doing is not right. And you administer some kind of discipline, and every time the parent is looking for maybe a tear, maybe, "Mommy, I'm really sorry. I shouldn't have done that." They're looking for some kind of remorse. But a lot of times you'll hear a parent very shortly after they have disciplined the parent, disciplined the child, and the child maybe is really brokenhearted for disappointing their parents and violating whatever expectation was made. Many times you'll hear the parents say, "All right, that's enough. Stop your crying." Now, what just happened there? Those of us that look on sometimes say, "Well, make up your mind. You want them to cry or not?" I mean, that thought comes to our mind, doesn't it? What'd you spank them for if you didn't want them to cry? Why did you get on to them? Why did you admonish them if you didn't want them to cry? Now you're telling them to stop crying. Well, here's the deal. You're trying to keep them on a straight path. You discipline them because they got over on this side and they was throwing sticks at the chickens or whatever it was that you didn't want them to do. And you said, "Don't ever do that again." And they were brokenhearted. So then they got over here and they start feeling sorry for themselves. "And Mama don't like me anymore," or "Daddy don't want me to be around," whatever. So then you say, "Now you've got to stop that. I want you to be in the path right here." You see what I'm saying? And that's the way life is. We go down the road, something happens to us, we're not expecting to it. We say, "Well, I won't put up with that any longer." And we steer it plumb over here, but if we don't catch it, we're going to end over there and crash somewhere. What did the Scripture say earlier? It says, "If any man offend not in word, the same is a perfect man, and is able also to bridle the whole body." Very important that we watch what we say and how we compensate. I want to try to comfort those that are discouraged. But if we only comfort those that are discouraged and we never teach them to rise above their circumstances, we've overcompensated. And if you have a mischievous child and you only discipline them for being mischievous and you don't address a pouty disposition, you're going to have a wreck on your hand. You're going to have trouble. You're going to have a dilemma that you don't know what to do with. If we only tell somebody when they do something wrong and we never tell them when they do something right, it's going to be a problem. And it's the other way around too. If we only say something when they do something right and we never tell them they do something wrong, that's a problem too. May the Lord help us as we compensate with our words. I think I'll quit. I've kept you long enough. May the Lord help us to be prepared to keep our... I think about... There's a song. I can't remember all of it. Something about keeping our eyes on the rail and our hand on the throttle. We have got to be alert. And there are so many things that we have to compensate for in life. Things that's thrown in our lap and we've got to address somehow, some way. And we try to address it with the words that we say and the deeds that we do. And then we find out that's not really perfect either. We've got to constantly adjust. We want to make it to the other side. We want to hear the Lord say, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." Trust no one is discouraged this morning. Trust we're encouraged to ask the Lord to help us to compensate with the words that we say and the deeds that we do. Pray for me.